Hello and welcome to State House Soundbites, WITF's Pennsylvania politics podcast. We're here in Little Amps Coffee Shop down the street from the Capitol. I'm Katie Meyer, State Capitol Bureau Chief for WITF. You can hear my stories on public radio stations across the state, including WHYY in Philly, WESA in Pittsburgh, and WPSU in State College. So joining me today from Harrisburg's Bureau are Wallace McKelvey from the Patriot News and Penn Live and Angela Columbus from the Philly Inquirer. Thanks for coming down, guys.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful. All right, so this week in the legislature, it was kind of, they were here. They were here for 3 days.
Bueller.
How active were they, would you say, this week?
Well, they didn't hit absolute zero, so that's a good thing. They certainly had there were several bills that were worth noting that I think we're going to talk about. Real ID made it to second consideration, and that's the card that, you know, that the federal government is requiring for all states to adopt this technology in order for its residents to, for example, get on an airplane without a passport,
right,
or enter a federal office building. So that one isn't quite over the finish line, but it made slow incremental progress this week. I believe you wrote about this in more in-depth,
yeah.
Angela.
Yeah, I've written about that. And basically what it stems from is a 2005 federal law that went into effect in the wake of the 9/11 terrorist attacks that essentially aimed at making driver's license, state-issued driver's license, more secure and less open to tampering and such. So there was this 2005 law, and Pennsylvania was among a few states that decided it was not going to comply with those requirements for a number of reasons, including the idea that it was a federal mandate that was going to cost a lot of money, and there were also some fears that were sparked by the idea of a national ID card. So there was in 2012, the legislature essentially passed a law, and it was signed into law by then Governor Corbett that said, that prohibited PennDOT from issuing these real ID compliant licenses. So that is what the legislature now is grappling with, which is how to repeal this 2012 law in order to prevent what Wallace described earlier, which is this, starting in 2018, the inability to enter a federal building without a passport and to fly without a passport.
Right. And so, this federal thing, it's basically the federal government putting its foot down. Pennsylvania is one of, I think, several states that have passed similar laws to prohibit. And I think it's an interesting distinction to make. Like, we're not just out of compliance. We have a law prohibiting us from being in compliance.
That's
which is really the challenge here. So I do want to go back to as well, because I think this is sort of a fascinating, this real ID debacle. It kind of goes back to like the 9/11 era, doesn't it? I mean, it really is like under Governor George W. Bush, this became, well, he was pro this. I think it's just an interesting, like, you're looking at the partisan breakdown of this stuff.
It's a perfect storm of like colliding between civil liberties and like people who are concerned about privacy being tracked all the time and having these unnecessary, in their view, and unfunded federal mandates handed down to the states.
Right. And then so
versus the need for security. You know, this idea that, you know, you have bad people getting on airplanes and entering office buildings.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the funniest things that we've seen with this, I think it's funny, is that, you know, generally the Republicans in our legislature are the anti-bureaucracy types, but they've allied with the ACLU, which is almost consistently with the Democrats on most issues on this.
And another irony is that, you know, the state issue ID currently already complies with a lot of the standards, the federal standards. There are certain ones that it does not comply with, and yes, it will cost money to bring Pennsylvania up to speed with those. But we're already almost like 80% there in our IDs. Now, you know, there is a June deadline that the department, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, has imposed on Pennsylvania to essentially repeal the 2012 law. And I think it's a real big unknown as to what's going to happen now if this deadline is not met. And as you all know, the legislature is not back until the end of the month. And that really only gives them, I believe it's like 5 session days to come to an agreement on this issue and send a bill to Governor Wolf.
And the legislature is infamous for ignoring deadlines, as right. it did with the local share casino revenues
right.
that go to kind of local municipalities
right.
and
that
counties.
That was supposed to be fixed in September.
And they're still thinking and discussing and not actually moving anything forward
right.
On that front. You know, it also, I think you have to connect this to ordinary people. If we do not have an ID that ordinary people can use, then, for example, if you have to go to a tax office, a federal IRS office, to get something done with your taxes, well, tough luck. You need to get a passport.
Right.
And especially for low-income people.
Right. This brings it into an access
It is not
problem.
Cheap. And they're discussing what could be maybe a two-tier system
right.
for driver's licenses in the state, where if you want to be in compliance, then you have to maybe pay more money to get in compliance and be able to go on an airplane or go to a federal office building.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of kind of ramifications. There's also, I think, as with most federal deadlines, they're usually pretty fungible.
They are. Well, so, Governor Wolf has already gotten us an
yeah.
extension.
An extension,
once.
Right.
Yeah.
So if the legislature shows that they're kind of making progress, it's possible that deadline could get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
Yeah, and, you know, there is going, at some point, it's going to be very difficult for them to continue to push this deadline back, because if the new standard, the new ID needs to be in place by January of 2018, you have to leave some time for PennDOT to produce these IDs and for people to get them. So you can't, you know, push this off until the last minute in the fall and expect it to be resolved in time.
Right. All right. So, and then again, just to recap, so the Senate had this on second consideration this week. Still, they need to, you know, pass it finally.
I believe it was the House that had it on second consideration this week. Is that correct?
I thought it was the Senate.
I'm pretty certain the Senate has passed a fairly clean bill that says we're going to repeal this law. This 2012 law, the House got it. It went to the state government committee, and it has been amended in the House to include what Wallace talked about, which is this two-tiered system
right.
Right. Of IDs.
Wallace,
in Pennsylvania.
I'm going to defer to Angela on this
one because
I think
well.
She knows what she's talking about.
Okay, very occasionally.
I'll check that and make sure we were correct on that fact. All right, so Real ID, it's been a long process. It's going to continue being a sore spot in the legislature, as so many things are. I want to talk about police body cameras as well. Now, this is not something I covered in too much depth,
yeah.
but could one of you just give us a quick recap of what we've been looking at with this bill?
Sure. You know, across the country and in Pennsylvania, different police departments, many of them in kind of cities and more urban areas, have been bringing on police body cameras. This comes in the wake of many police-involved shootings that were controversial. There's questions of kind of racial animus involved in some of these shootings. And the body cameras are another tool for potentially holding police to account for these shootings,
right.
where you can say, you know, there's more likelihood that allegation will be resolved if there's an actual video recording of what the officer saw while he was in that altercation. Also, on the other side, you know, there are also occasions where suspects bring false allegations against police officers. And so these body cameras, the argument for them is that they can also protect police officers from these false allegations. Now, in Pennsylvania and in most other states, there are also questions of privacy and whether, like, there's kind of a legal gray area where this falls into, and questions of the rights of private property owners. If a police officer enters a private home, what are their rights to record people who may or may not be suspects of a criminal investigation, or they may or may not be engaged in any criminal activity? Also, what happens to the video after these incidents take place? Are they public records? are they, should they be subject to public records laws across this country? The way it's generally been treated is, you know, they've fallen into the right to know law here. What this, what the legislation that's being considered now would do, it would take it away from the domain of the right to know law and create a separate process by which people would have a set amount of time in which to request a copy of the video that was recorded in a police, any kind of police interaction. And then the department, the agency that took the video would have an X amount of time to respond. At that point, instead of going to, for example, the Office of Open Records, that dispute, if the agency denies the access to that video, would then go immediately to the courts, to the Court of Common Pleas.
So then, what have we seen? How far has it gotten so far? Do you guys remember?
It has passed the Senate.
Passed the Senate this week.
And I believe and Wallace has covered this much more than I have, but I believe it also passed the Senate in the last legislative session and did not get traction in the House.
Okay.
So the question will be at this point is it going to meet the same fate? And I think what Wallace talked about too is pretty important, which is the public access issue. And what you saw this week was that there were a lot of public access advocates who said this is really bad for the public because it effectively shields these body camera videos from ever becoming public. Because first off, you have to ask for it within 20 days of an incident. And second of all, a police department can turn down that request if it is if there is evidence contained on it, which in most cases there would be if it becomes an issue. So I think those are some of the issues that the House is going to grapple with when it takes up this bill.
And there's a question about access as well. There's some vague language in the Greenleaf bill that says you have to, that you should name the people involved in that incident.
Right.
And also by taking it out of the domain of the right to know law and kind of taking any appeals directly to the courts, the person requesting it, they have to put up money.
Right.
There's a $125 filing fee. And there's certainly an argument to be made that if you are personally involved in that incident, if you're just an ordinary citizen who was involved in a police altercation, do you have the money to fight what could be a long and costly legal battle with the agency in order to get those records? And even for news agencies, certainly the
sure.
larger news agencies have legal departments or a attorney on retainer who can fight those battles. But if you're fighting for every single police video that is of public interest, that's going to become very expensive very fast.
All right. So, police body cams, I think that's a succinct summary of that. And now I do want to talk about something that has, I think in the last few weeks, we've started to hear much more about this as various groups have started doing some activism around this topic, as we've gotten some legislation in place, gerrymandering. This has been an issue in Pennsylvania for
forever.
I feel like that's how I introduce every bill. This has been an issue for a long time, and it's back.
Right. Yeah.
But, that's such is the nature
it's
of our legislation.
It's been an issue since the 1800s.
Right. So, gerrymandering, for anybody who doesn't know, hasn't heard this word before, it's basically when a political district, where it be it a congressional district or a state senate or a state house representative's district, is drawn in such a way that it enables political gain for a certain party. They can either pack, their constituents in, or they can diffuse the constituents from another party. So, it's a manipulative thing that lawmakers can do, especially in Pennsylvania, because our politicians are the ones who draw these boundaries. And as I think in many states, Republicans swept through in the last time we were reapportioned in 2010. And they really, I mean, we're very heavily gerrymandered towards Republicans right. at this point in time.
And there were lawsuits, too.
And there were lawsuits.
We can talk about that. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And the you see something like the congressional 7th district.
Right,
Is kind of the, it's become the poster child nationwide right. for gerrymandering.
That's
because
in the
it
Philly
is such
region,
a,
right?
It's such
yes.
a delightfully complex kind of shaped district that,
right.
that has been described as, goofy kicking Donald Duck.
if you haven't looked up the congressional 7th district.
get on it. Just Google
look up
that
the
district.
Congressional 7th. But Wallace, so I did want to ask you. So you had a good story this week. I thought it was just kind of fun, where you just looked at our most gerrymandered districts and kind of looked at the shapes that they're in. Because really, if you look at a gerrymandered district, if you look at our congressional maps, what the district, the phrase that they use is these districts are supposed to be compact and contiguous, which means that it's basically like you look at a square or a circle, something that's sort of like doesn't have arms going everywhere like an octopus, but that's what these districts look like because they've been just very specifically
carve-outs. They're carve-outs.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I guess I want to ask you guys, just so people can get a sense of this, like, what do those carve-outs do, like, on the ground? Like, what does this do to the people who are being redistricted every 10 years?
Yeah, well, you'll have to forgive me. I don't have all the numbers memorized. But, for example, there's a district out in the Pittsburgh area where it's literally they took two separate areas, and in between the two areas is, I believe, the Beaver River. And there's just a single crossing where they take a single little line, a hinge, that connects these two separate areas on separate sides of the river together with that little carve-out at where across the river. I don't think there's anyone living there, but that counts as contiguous. And you look at, we brought up the 7th Congressional District. You have two separate areas that are connected by a tiny little hinge that was described by one kind of commentator as, well, it's the point where Goofy's, foot connects with Donald Duck.
Right.
but it's also important to point out, there are a lot of districts that are clearly some funny business going on where the technology that's available today, where the people who are drawing these districts, usually legislative aides, they are using the software today to kind of pick and choose which neighborhoods, even down to which house they want to include in a specific district.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always that case. For example, Mike Sterla's district, actually, it looks like it has been gerrymandered. It is such a crazily shaped district with the borders just kind of, it's like little tiny tentacles
right.
Going out in all different directions. But it actually largely follows the contours of the Lancaster city limits.
Mm-hmm.
That is a case where it looks gerrymandered, but it's not.
Yeah, interesting. And so I think we should note, gerrymandering is not, we mentioned that Republicans benefited from this in the last census, and this is done every 10 years.
Right.
We're reapportioned and we redistrict. So this was done, we got the census in 2010, the
right.
redistricting was passed in 2012. And so this would happen again in 2020 to 2022.
Right.
But so now, it's a bipartisan thing. Democrats do this, Republicans do this. The Republicans just happened to have the majorities last time. But coming up into 2020 and 2022, Democrats would likely have the advantage because in Pennsylvania, as you guys know, I mean, this always comes down to the Supreme Court, right? I mean, there's a panel that decides on these districts. It's a bipartisan panel. Obviously, if they don't agree, it goes to the court. Right now, we have a Democratic court. The
right.
tiebreaker would go to the Democrats. That's sort of a simple way of putting it. So, there is some bipartisan support in the legislature, and I think there's more that's growing with time to fix this, to make it a little bit less partisan. So, Wallace, I know you were at the rally with me the other day at Fair Districts PA. That's an organization that's been trying to push redistricting reform in the legislature, and they've been more active recently. So, what's this legislation that we're hearing about now?
Well, like some other states across the country, what they're pushing for is an independent commission that would arguably, even though the people on the commission are partisan, they would be kind of balanced in such a way that that they would create a more fair and even map. This seems to have worked in other states where, you know, if you take it out of the hands of the party leaders, and that's where it is right now. You know, for the congressional districts, the lines are drawn by and finally approved by the legislature. So if you have a majority kind of partisan split in the legislature, which we currently do, you know, it creates an incentive for that majority party to draw the congressional lines in a way that favors them. And for the legislative districts, you have the party leaders create a body amongst themselves where they create these lines and they approve them and they go through the process that in right. the most recent time ended up in the Supreme Court. So this the idea is that you take it out of the remove this whole process from the domain of party leaders. You put it with people who hopefully do not have as much incentive to kind of, you know, to draw the lines in a way that advantages their party.
Right.
And then you're left with something that actually makes sense.
And so now we have bills that would do this in the House and in the Senate. The challenge here, Angela, is mm-hmm. that in order to make this happen, we would need a constitutional amendment.
Right.
Would we not? How much luck do we generally have in passing large things like that?
Not much. And there's been, as you approach the deadline every time for the reapportionment, first off the census and then the reapportionment and the redrawing of maps, there's always a lot of discussion about the need to do this, but not a lot of action. But essentially, it would require changing the way it works in Pennsylvania would require a constitutional amendment. That, in turn, requires that bills to change the way it's done pass in two consecutive two-year sessions, and then put to a voter referendum. And essentially, to make this meaningful and mean something to people. The first bill would have to pass in this legislative session, in the 17-18 legislative session. And so far, we haven't really seen much this issue rising up to become a priority. That's not to say that it couldn't. But again, it puts the onus on the very people whose livelihoods and jobs, rely on keeping the system, in some respects, the way it is.
Right. And so this legislative session ends really this time next year, right?
Yes.
We have another year.
We have
which
another
sounds
year.
Like a long time, but for something like a constitutional amendment, it's a lift. I think it's a lift for our legislature, which is divided, no matter how many signatures they have on this thing.
And the House bill, I mean, from what the organizers in Fair District PA were saying, the House bill had pretty decent support, 88 co-sponsors right. as of earlier this week. But still, it's up to the party leaders to decide make this a
right.
priority and take it and bring it to the floor. And it's, as you said before, it's also a bipartisan thing when it comes to changing the laws. Because, the way it was explained to me by an expert in this, similar to the lottery, the odds of winning the lottery are very slim. But you have this kind of, the way that humans are built to think, I can be the one to win the lottery. So if you are in the minority party, there's a certain element of self-delusion where you can say, well, one day I'm going to be the majority party
right.
and I'll get to draw my own lines. So it creates this incentive there for the majority party certainly doesn't want to relinquish that power in many cases. And the minority party may not want to relinquish that power either because one day they too could be in the majority, and they too could get to draw the lines.
And you know what? They cut deals. I mean, even though the minority party is not the one in charge, they do cut deals to protect certain areas of the state that are important to them, certain seats that are important to them, and that was a theme echoed throughout the 2011 redistricting process.
Yeah. So, and I do want to ask as well, because I think this is an important note to put onto this. You know, there's really, you know, large political connotations for having a very gerrymandered district as well. Basically, that, like, these districts become very safe for incumbents of a certain party. And that, in turn, you know, makes your elections less competitive, and that makes your legislature more partisan at the end of the day.
Yes, very safe and more partisan because, and people who study these things have said that the ideological polarization that we're seeing now is really the direct result of this type of gerrymandering, because you're creating these seats where you have like-minded voters that who will only vote for a very specific type of candidate, who then comes to the legislature and, you know, knowing
doesn't want to compromise,
and knowing that he or she has to answer back to the voters at home. But the one thing I wanted to mention about gerrymandering is that you hear from the legislative leaders or spokesmen for the legislative leaders that an independent commission is not necessarily the perfect answer, because who will appoint them? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's, say, the governor, how do you remove politics from that situation?
Right. I think what I had heard from them, it was that it was the Secretary of State who is in charge of it. So, I mean, and they do have, and you can go to, you know, fairdistrictspa.org, because they do have a write-up of the bill and what they've been pushing for, if anybody wants to look at it. But, you know, there'd be a lot of, they would go through a randomization process and make sure that, you know, it's sort of like picking a jury. I think that's how I would put it. Lawmakers are still allowed to strike a certain number of people once they get down to a more compact list of them. So that gives them some measure of control over the process. There's...
But, of course, people that currently hold power do not want to relinquish that power.
I think
it's the same thing with changing the way that we pick judges.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. There's a lot of power in drawing districts, and so changing that process is never going to be easy. Well, on that note.
on that dire note.
Oh, well, our democracy. So next week, no legislature, but anything in particular you guys are watching, anything you're looking at?
You know, we've been following a couple of different things on our end. Obviously, the gubernatorial race, and there's been some news lately with the potential Republican gubernatorial candidate,
right.
Scott Wagner.
We took a week off from Scott Wagner.
We won't get into that too much, but also the lieutenant governor and his controversies with an investigation into his behavior towards a state the state police detail that protects him and the employees who worked at his residence.
The state police detail that used to protect him now
has
gotten taken away.
It's an ongoing saga.
Yes, it is.
The Ballad of Mike Stack. Anyway, Wallace, anything you're looking at?
Nothing that I care to speak publicly about.
All right. Wallace has some secrets that he's not going to tell us. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much again, Wallace McKelvey from Penn Live and the Patriot, Angela Columbus from Philly Inquirer. This has been fun. We will see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.